It's time for JT the Brick.
The Raider offseason is about content that is productive.
Shotgun to O'Connell. Backpedaling, lobbing to the end zone, trying to get Adams. Makes the grab! Touchdown, Raiders!
I thought Aiden O'Connell played pretty well last year. He's a quarterback who's serviceable.
Now pressure. Gets out of there. Crosby's got it from behind! Back at the 45-yard line!
There's no better player who plays with heart and passion and speed than Mad Max Crosby. Wait till you see him this upcoming season.
JT the Brick.
Dot to throw. Spillane on the blitz, and he wraps him up and holds him up for a sack.
I love the addition of Jack Jones. All the plays he made last year will be a great addition for this team moving forward.
Intercepted down the sideline. Intercepted Jack Jones, and he walks in. Touchdown.
And now.
All right, now we're good. Let's get to it.
Here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT with you on a busy, busy day here on the flagship of the Silver and Black, Raider Nation Radio, brought to you by Golden Entertainment. They own the Strat, 64-plus PTs. They fuel the monologue. Best happy hour in town, as you know, from 5 to 7 to midnight to 2. Head on out to PTs, especially to watch hockey. They're a proud partner of our Golden Knights, and I'm getting worried about the Golden Knights. They got a massive game coming up here as they lost home ice advantage. I'll get to that later in the show with Gary Lawless, the premier hockey insider, not only in this town, nationally. He's great. Tom Telesco, the GM of the Raiders, will join us momentarily. He's scheduled to join us right about now. And Vinny Bonsignor in studio. That's a hell of a show, and I had nothing to do with it. We got it booked up, ready to go. We want to hear from you. A quick reminder, join me live this Friday, 2 days from now, May 3rd at Grimaldi's. In Summerlin at Boca Park. Real easy to find there. Everybody knows Grimaldi's. They're right there in Boca Park. We'll broadcast live from noon to 2. Hands down, the best pizza I ever had. You can come in, get some pizza, get some food, get some salad, whatever you want. Their calzones are amazing. We'll have a couple of Grimaldi gift cards. We're going to have a lot of fun out there. We're going to be outside, inside. The weather's going to be great. I mean, come on out and see me. It's going to be Raiders and Golden Knights, and it's the night of a Golden Knights game, the day of, in a must-win game by then, or maybe a clinching game for VGK. So that's where we're going today. No YouTube until next hour because I'm loaded with three guests, and doesn't work that well on YouTube when I have guests. More of the monologue at the top. At about 1:15, we'll switch the show up on YouTube and get you rolling there. The Raider draft class of 2024 is what we're spending time with the remainder of the week. We want your analysis on what the Raiders did from Brock Bowers all the way down to Trey Taylor, all the picks in between. I'll talk about that with Tom Telesco coming up here as we open up the show. Earlier today, and I'll throw the name out there, I watched Colin Cowherd. He has one of the most successful shows ever in sports radio. He picked the Raiders to come in dead last. Okay, I don't fall off the couch anymore. I'm standing up in my backyard brick, and here we go again. Not so much him, everybody else who doesn't understand how the Raiders got better. You might have heard they got Christian Wilkins. They got Gardner Minshew. They got Michael Gallup. They got Brock Bowers. The Raiders didn't get worse, and they have the same quarterback. The Raiders and Aiden O'Connell have the same quarterback they had last year, plus Gardner Minshew, so they only got better. I mean, even the biggest Raider haters, you know, the Niner Empire and Kansas City fans, the biggest Raider haters cannot debate that the Raiders didn't get better. You might not think the Raiders are very good. You might think they're an 8-9-7-win team, but you cannot debate that they didn't get better with Brock Bowers and Christian Wilkins. I mean, a 5-year-old could figure that out. But the Chargers lost their three biggest offensive weapons other than their quarterback. They lost Eckler, Williams, and Allen. They didn't get better. They had a good draft. I don't know how great it was. We'll see in a couple of years. And Denver is a train wreck. So another year, what do I do? What is part of my job? Part of my job is to protect the gates of the Raider Nation. Now, look, I can only say so much in a tweet because people are going to come back and say, well, what are you talking about, JT? You're a homer. You get paid by the Raiders to talk about this. You have Raider propaganda. Fair. I'm also a season ticket holder. I've also been with the Raiders now going on 26 years. I hope I have some credibility because I've been here through some dark times with the Raiders. And when I started the first 4 years, they went to the Super Bowl and 2 championship games. I think I can talk about what I've seen over the years. But one of the major things I do is I just point out when people talk down about this team. So I wanted to lead with that as we open up the show. Because it doesn't make me angry. I don't get crazy. I just wanted to bring it up to you. Tom Telesco, kind enough to join us, the GM of the Silver and Black. Tom, thanks for coming on. How are you and your staff rested after a grind over not only the last couple of days, the last couple of months? How are you?
Yeah, it's been a grind since January. The draft's such a long process, a lot of people involved. I'm kind of somewhat relieved and glad it's over and we're on to the next phase, because the next phase is more fun. We've been on the grass with the players the last couple of days. And for me, getting to know our guys better, just watching them practice and just being out on the football field again and putting a team together, that's, to me, that's more gratifying than going through the draft process. The draft process is just part of, you know, team building, but actually getting out there with the players, watching them practice, go through drills, getting a better feel for them, it's been fun the last couple of days.
You know, in all your years of being a GM, picking higher or picking lower than 13, and then Brock Bowers shows up there, and you talked about the dress rehearsal the day before, getting your whole team in the war room, everyone's there, and then all of a sudden, Tom, this plays out. I can't imagine what it was like. I know there was some contingency plans, but Eric Allen and I were on the pre leading right up to the draft, and we didn't even bring up Brock's name, not out of disrespect, we just didn't think he would be available. Then he starts becoming available, the Michael Penix move, and then Denver with Bo Nix, and especially the Jets passing on him. What was that like in real time as Brock Bowers came closer to you at 13?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad because we had already played it out probably a couple weeks before, just because you have to have all the scenarios covered. And there were some scenarios that, you know, he could be there with our pick. So let's talk about it, you know, 2 weeks before the draft. We're not going to talk about it while we're on the clock. So we had discussed where we were. We definitely knew that there's a good chance all these quarterbacks could go early. You know, we had seen Atlanta go out and work out. Pinex brought everybody out there. So we knew they liked him. Wasn't exactly sure where. It could be first round, could be second round, but we knew. And then we knew Denver was in the quarterback market. So, so you just go through all the contingencies of what could happen. And look, in the end, just keep it real simple. Like the Raiders, we didn't score enough points last year on offense. Mm-hmm. So this is a player that can help us score. And guys that at least can make plays or playmaker plays, they come in all different positions, shapes, sizes. You know, it could be a running back, could be a tight end, could be a receiver, could be a slot, it could be whatever. And we think he can really help the offense as a piece, whether it's at the line of scrimmage as a tight end, whether it's split out as a receiver, whether it's as a big slot, could be as a wing. So there's a lot of versatility with this game, with Brock's game, and a lot of explosion in this game as far in the passing game. So in the end, it gives us an offensive playmaker early in the draft. And like you just said, we had worked through that scenario probably 2 weeks beforehand just in case that happened. So we were prepared for it.
Tom Telesco is our guest. You know, Tom, you have more access than our fans, obviously, in your scouting department with the film of Brock Bowers. I saw a lot of it, and then everybody shooting me his YouTube video when I had him on stage there at the facility. He's got a 15-minute highlight video on YouTube and is arguably considered the greatest college tight end of all time with the two Mackeys and the two national championships. What did you see? Maybe a little nugget that all of our listeners would like to know on the flash of him, but the consistency that he brings to every game and every down.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big billing right there. I mean, there's been, you know, I was just thinking, as you're talking about the greatest tight ends of all time, I was just thinking about some of the guys going through my head that may, you know, they may have an argument with you. But, no, his game is, there's just so many factors. You know, this is a big-time high school player, high recruit, which is why he ended up at Georgia. But he can do so many things with the ball in his hand, which usually is a tight end, especially for us, because we were looking for, you know, whether receiver, tight end, whatever, even a back, right after catch is so important in an offense. You know, get the ball out of the quarterback's hand, get some easy throws, and let the receiver go do his work. And Brock did that at a really high level at Georgia as far as run after catch, not only the instincts of it, but the athletic ability, the speed, and then he runs with an edge. I mean, he looks to break tackles. He looks for contact. And then the part of his game that goes a little bit overlooked for an athletic tight end is he does have some ability as a blocker because he's really tough. He's physical. He gets after it. He gives up a little bit of size to the bigger defensive ends, but he'll fight them down in and down out. And then when he gets on the perimeter at the blocker, he's looking to knock people down. And that's a part of playing tight end in this league. Something he had to do at Georgia, because if you don't do that at Georgia, you won't get on the field, you don't get the ball. And our level is the same way. You know, you don't do the dirty work, then you might not get any passes in the passing game. So he's a pretty well-rounded tight end. decorated college career, mm-hmm. and he's coming in the door here at 21 years old, you know, so he still had a lot of development to do.
Tom Telesco is our guest. Jackson Powers Johnson, oh my God, the Oregon friends of mine up there who went to school, the alumni who watched every game are just blown away. And at that point, Paul Fisher out of Notre Dame, there was some good right tackle still on the board, and a guy who played center who can clearly play guard here. What was the key to that pick as best available and a beast and a guy who looks to compete? Obviously, you'll make the decision and coach will make the decision, but clearly a plug-and-play beast of a starter.
Well, he plays with the mentality that we're looking for, and you can see that pretty easily on the film. His tenacity, his nastiness, his physicalness, and it's just all-around effort of how he plays the game. The fact that he can, you know, probably play either guard spot and center is a big part of it for his career. You know, we're thinking guard right now, but he's going to come in and compete for a job. And again, this is a young player. He's 21 years old. Mm-hmm. His football background at Oregon is a little bit smaller. Just there, you know, really, you know, 2-year starter. So he still has a lot of growth in his game. But he has the things you can't teach, which is that mentality with how we want to play on both sides of the ball, but certainly on the offensive line. We think he's going to fit in really well there.
Yeah, and Tom, that's important because you said it at the press conference too, getting players that can match the intensity of your head coach in Antonio Pierce. Is this like a perfect example of that? His sideline when he was there at the spring game and he was talking and he's got the Raider hat on and the autumn wind is a pirate. It sounds like he gets it as he walks in the building, the history of the offensive line for the Silver and Black.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, it makes scouting easy when you're scouting for an identity, when you're looking for players that fit an identity and you've defined that identity, which we've defined that here. So, you know, you can throw on a tape of any player and after, you know, you start rolling through it, you start getting a feel of, hey, does this guy fit us or not? And with him, it, you know, it's pretty quick. It's probably the first quarter, the first game you're watching. You're like, he plays with the mentality we're looking for. And then after that, you're starting to look for all the other traits, the strength, the leverage, the athletic ability, football intelligence, all that. But yeah, if you can define the identity of who you want to be, that makes scouting pretty easy as far as finding guys that fit that.
All right, so you get a corner in your last pick in round 7, Devonshire, and then Richardson in the 4th round. Clearly a need. You got good corners there, but you need possibly some more competition and some depth there. Tell me about your philosophy and your department going into getting a corner early in the draft and how satisfied you are.
Well, the philosophy is always you can never have enough corners. Mm-hmm. It's a passing league, which means you got to be able to cover. And corners are hard to find. And once the season starts, if you have injuries at that position, it's a very difficult position to add in season, someone that can come in and really play at a high level for you. So you can never have enough of them. I learned that from Bill Polian early on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, both those guys will come in and add to the depth, and hopefully they'll keep growing in our system. And that's the key. And there's some opportunity there. There's some good competition at that position. And that's why, you know, we end up, you know, really going back, not back to back as far as rounds, but at least adding two guys there. Mm-hmm. And we find a couple corners after the draft. And we'll keep looking between now and training camp because we'd like to try and make that the deepest group possible so we can weather the storm, which usually comes at some point during the year. You get that talent level as high as we can get it.
I was at the Biletnikoff Hall of Fame golf tournament on Monday, and Raider legend Phil Villapiano, Super Bowl champ, comes up to me and says, JT, I love Tommy Eichenberg. Oh, my God. He starts grabbing me. And I'm like, Phil, I know, and you love Spillane, and you love anybody who plays linebacker. And he was excited because he saw a lot of his games. Tell us about Tommy and how you can fit him in, especially special teams with the depth at the linebacker position.
I was just going to say, with those two linebackers, he probably sees himself and with how they play, which, again, we're looking for the identity of how we're going to play. And Tommy Eichenberg has that. He's all ball all the time. He's focused in. He plays the game hard, plays the game the way you're supposed to play it, and played at a high level at, you know, one of the best schools in the country. So not surprised to hear that you know, Phil sees that same, the style of how he played and some of these guys that are here, you know, the guys, you know, with Spillane being one of them as far as how he plays. So him and Tommy, and, you know, we'll get those guys going. It's been fun watching Diablo run around, mm-hmm. and Luke Masterson is a really good athlete. We know Devine's a really good athlete. So just trying to upgrade the talent on that group moving forward.
wrapping it up with Tom Telesco. So, Tom, the undrafted free agents, also something you're very strong at. So the draft ends, and all of a sudden, you're right on the phones, getting rolling here. Can you take our listeners behind the scenes, what that process was like for you, the amount of players you wanted to be in contact with? I heard you say there were some good players that were taken in the seventh round. You probably would have called them in if they were available. What was that process like for you the first time with the Raiders?
Yeah, it's controlled chaos is what it is after the draft, because everybody's doing the same thing as quickly as they can. We had a pretty good process to it between the scouts, the coaches, and then actually the biggest part of it is David Kristoff here. He kind of keeps track of the money because there's a cap on what you can give signing bonus-wise. So when you're dealing with multiple players at multiple positions in a short amount of time, you have to have somebody very dialed in, focused, and good with the numbers to make sure we don't go over the limit. So he kind of handled that. JoJo Wooden and Champ Kelly and Brandon Urban kind of directed the area scouts as far as where we're going with what players. And then the coaches kind of helped with the recruiting of those players. And you have to make some quick decisions in real time. And I think we ended up signing 16 or 17 players after the draft very quickly. But and we'll see how they work out. I'm excited about the group once they get in here. But what I liked was the process of everyone working. Mm-hmm. It's the ultimate team working together in the draft process after the draft, because you're looking at maybe, you know, 30 to 40 people working together in the same time, and we get it all done in about 30 minutes. So it was just great to see everyone work together, and we'll see how this crop looks.
Hey, Tom, finally, 12 personnel. A lot of fans are learning more about that and the style of this. I asked our research department there, we got such a great unit there at Silver and Black Productions, to go back to when Raymond Chester played with Dave Casper in 79. They both went to the Pro Bowl, two of the greatest tight ends of all time. And now we're hearing more about 12 personnel and Luke Getsy. And look, we're not here to tip what the Raider offense is going to be. It's a work in progress, but you seem really excited about the additions here and this scheme that Luke Getsy is going to have a chance to put together on the field as early as now throughout training camp in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, you're just looking for different ways to attack a defense. Obviously, Raymond Chester and Dave Casper, that's a pretty good way to do it, especially the way they played football then. The game's a little bit more wide open now, and those guys would have fit this game at this point, definitely, would, if they were playing now. Those guys are great receiving tight ends and excellent athletes and great hands. To have potentially two, we know what Michael can do, and you saw what Michael could do last year, Michael Mayer, with the matchups that he has. He's a tough cover for people because not only is he really athletic, they can separate, but he's got a really thick, strong body, and he can play through contact, and he's got just a great feel in the passing game, like a natural feel for zone, for separating. And then we're going to get Brock in the mix, and both those guys, we can move around, because even when Michael was at Notre Dame, they would split him out as a receiver sometimes. Obviously, Brock has been split out before. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're both on the field. They both have to line up on the line of scrimmage with the five offensive linemen. We can do anything we want with them. And then obviously you got the receivers as a part of that. So it's exciting. And the more you can do to try and stress the defense, the better. So that's the part of the goal with that.
Hey, Tom, last one. When you were there the day after, you're upstairs working, the draft's going on. Brock Bowers gets introduced, and he goes through the motions, sits down with our department, and then we bring him out on the field, and there's five high schools out there, boys and girls, flag, tackle football, the whole indoor facility set up to welcome this kid to come in. That's never happened before. That's on your dime now with Coach Pierce to say, we are going to open this up. We're transparent. We want our fans and the student-athletes here in town to experience that. I thought that was a fantastic, introducing Brock Bowers and his family that way. What did that mean to you as you're new to the organization, but you're seeing the way the organization runs from within?
Yeah, it's pretty cool because my office actually looks down on the practice field. And the draft hadn't started yet, so I was in here doing some work, and I'm looking down there. And seeing everybody excited about the draft, and hey, the more we can do with high school athletes, not just football players, but all sports, the better. There's nothing better, and there's nothing better for development of high school kids than playing some sort of sport in school. So the more we can get them out here, get them excited. I know Brock walking around, he was just taking in the whole environment. And, you know, he's coming from the University of Georgia, so that's pretty big level right there. But to see the excitement here, the passion for, you know, that Raiders fans is unmatched. But yeah, it was a pretty cool event. I actually wanted to go down there, and I kind of thought twice about it, but figured I do have some work to do here. But it's just the commitment that this organization has made to Las Vegas and you know, not only the fans, but the local high schools. And one of the cool things we did probably a couple weeks before the draft is we did a local day where we had players work out either from UNLV, either USC, UCLA, because they count as our local schools by NFL standards. And then we had some kids from Bishop Gorman and Centennial, some different high schools that we were playing that were college juniors or seniors. We had them work out here. I thought that was a pretty neat event to have, you know, some high school kids that, you know, went out and played Division I football or even Division II football and had a chance to work out for their hometown team, the Las Vegas Raiders. And, you know, typically some of those guys we signed in the past after the draft, so we'll see how that works out. But, yeah, it's just a commitment that this team has made, this organization has made to Las Vegas, which is great to see.
Thank you so much for your time, Tom. I know you've been real busy. Appreciate you giving us a few minutes. All the best.
All right, sounds great. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, Tom Telesco. Appreciate that. As we went through, you know, some of the picks, I wasn't going to go pick by pick here. We got to kind of talk about the big guys that would take and what he did afterwards. And Vinny Bonsignor, kind enough to join us in studio as you're putting together a column here. Exciting times here because Raider fans are looking for more content, especially coming off the draft. What's that like for you?
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's been fun already. I'm just writing the story about how Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers are going to be used together. And I think, you know, there were some eyebrows that were raised. I mean, here are the Raiders investing the 13th pick overall in Brock 12 months after trading up in the second round to get Michael Mayer. Was it a waste? Is it a knock on Michael Mayer? Are they duplicating the position? Well, it's really anything but. These two players, although they play the same position, play the position a little bit differently. And in Bowers' case, he's more of that unicorn weapon rather than that traditional tight end, whereas Michael Mayer is more of the traditional tight end, but has the ability, understanding, as Tom just talked about, the understanding of the position, which allows him to find the open space in zone coverage and know where to be, know where to get to, but also a physical presence that allows him to be a mismatch in one-on-one type of a coverage when he's being defended by either a slower linebacker or a smaller safety or a smaller cornerback. Who can also play in line up in the slot. I'm a Notre Dame fan, so I watched every snap of Michael Mayer's career, and he can do it all from anywhere on the field and is a big physical presence with the ball in his hands. He's looking to run people over when he gets the ball in his hands, whereas Bowers, every bit the athlete, but just in a different way, a more fluid, faster kind of an athlete that could also do it all. And so they're going to play off of each other rather than replace each other or duplicate each other.
What I'm fascinated about with this, I recently saw Renfrow get over 100 receptions and Waller 100.
Yeah.
With Devontae. Okay, so when you look at the math of those guys and Devontae coming in, then Waller at the end and Hunter Renfrow at the end, we've seen, and Derek Carr was a very good player here, we've seen what this offense can be like when everyone's playing well for a certain amount of games. The problem was there wasn't enough consistency. The defense wasn't good enough a couple of years ago to get him the ball back. Now that the defense is vastly improved, especially with Christian Wilkins, he could blow this whole thing up if him and Max have all-pro years. Then the offense could have shorter fields. And I've seen what Bowers has been able to do inside the 30, not even inside the red zone, on top of Devontae, who seems like, Vinny, he'll always be double-teamed. But I just hope that Getsy's able to really turn this up where it looks much different than defensive coordinators think it could look on paper.
Yeah, and it should, because the players that he's working with here with the Raiders as opposed to in Chicago are just better players.
Yeah.
You know,
the
Bears ran the eighth most times in the NFL out of 12 personnel. Cole Kmet, and they had some kind of Mercedes Lewis, who's not a pass catcher anymore. He's just strictly a blocker. And I forget who the other tight end was. Not a household name by any stretch of the imagination. That's a far cry, and I like Cole Kmet. He's another Notre Dame kid. But that's a far cry from Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers. Those are two completely different situations that he's dealing with. He didn't have a Devontae Adams in Chicago. He didn't have Jacoby Myers as, you know, your opposite wide receiver. And now you throw Michael Gallup into the picture and Trey Tucker into the picture. Zamir White, if we can believe what we saw over those last four games of the season, the dynamic running ability that he brings, the physicality that he brings with it, those are not weapons that Luke Getsy had to work with in Chicago. So I'm always a firm believer in talent, it's got to start there.
Yeah.
Then you could be as creative as you want and do all the things that you want, and you call the players call the plays that you want. But when the ball is in the hands of better players, better things are going
to
happen.
Vinny Bonsignore joins us. So I want to show, before I get to the quarterback question I have, with DJ Glaze coming in potentially at right tackle early or not, I have respect for Thea Mumford. Illuminor's gone. It felt like there were swing tackles. There wasn't a future stud there at that position. I have too much respect for Thea Mumford to say that that's a hole that they have to fill.
Right.
But the rest of that offensive line is set.
Correct.
And if they're healthy, it's really good. We were talking about the philosophy of the center position. Andre James gets an extension long before we heard the name Jackson Powers Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to specifically walk me through why they gave him the extension, didn't lose him, and now the center coming in could possibly be better than him, but he could move to guard, or what does this say about the interior of that offensive line?
Yeah, it's been a long time since the Raiders have had three athletic center and two guards like they have right now, at least on paper, with Dylan Parham and Andre James and Jackson Powers Johnson, JPJ, as I like to call him now. First of all, Andre James is a pretty good center.
Yeah, he is. You know, he wouldn't have got a contract extension.
This is the second, this is the third group that's been in charge. If you go back to John Gruden, they gave him an extension early on. Remember, he was an undrafted free agent. They gave him an extension. They designated him. Tom Cable designated him. That's the center. Here comes Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler and the new offensive line coach. And people were like, "Oh, I wonder what Andre James's future is going to be." Well, he was here for 2 years as the undisputed top center on the team under that regime. Now it's this new regime with Tom Telesco and a new offensive coordinator, a new offensive line coach. What do? They sign him to another extension. What does that tell you? That's three different sets of eyeballs that have looked at Andre James and said, this guy's good enough to keep around and play center. So he doesn't have a lot of positional flexibility. He's strictly a center. But you get that locked up for the next few years. And now Jackson Powers Johnson is available. And you talked about it. You asked, Tom, there were some good tackles that were on the board at that pick number 44. I thought they were going to use one of them to get, whether it was the kid from Houston or BYU, Roger Rosengarten from Washington, Blake Fisher at Notre Dame, but they go with the guard. And that tells you a lot about him and about JPJ and the impact that they think he's going to have. It also says a little bit, about Thayer Munford.
Yep.
I don't think it's necessarily whole.
I don't either.
When he's been on the field, he's played pretty well.
He's definitely worthy of holding his position down. Vinny, last one, and we're going to get this a lot, and I'm sure you're going to write about it through the preseason. It seems to me that Gardner Minshew has better success in 12 personnel, fact, than he does in other concepts. He's just proven that. That's kind of what his strength is, 66% completion percentage in 12 personnel. I'm not saying that's going to give an advantage over Aiden O'Connell. But we're going to spend the next 3 months talking about a quarterback battle, and it should be.
Right.
It should be discussed on this station daily about a battle for quarterback. This isn't Ken Stabler in his prime. We're not talking about Rich Gannon coming off an MVP. These are two guys that have to prove themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The battle coming in with this new personnel, what's one thing we should look for?
Boy, it's accuracy. Mm-hmm. I think for Aiden O'Connell, it's going to be mobility in the pocket. Has he improved that? Because, Gardner Minshew's not this great athlete or anything like that, but he's shown that he can be mobile enough to get away from trouble and make plays in the pocket, and sometimes he'll take off and run it. The Raiders saw that when they played him in Indianapolis. So I think he has the edge in that regard. So I think who meshes with who?
Yeah.
These practices, starting in OTAs, which are ongoing right now, pretty soon they're actually getting in on the field, 11-on-11, 7-on-7. It's going to be fascinating to kind of chart that. Who's going to play in the preseason?
Right.
How much of that is going to play into it? This could be something where you want to make sure that you have your guy to start the season.
Healthy.
But also have a definitive answer on who that guy
Absolutely.
Is going to be. But I don't know that this is something that's not going to carry over into the season. And we'll see whoever gets the start better hold on to it and better play well.
You got it. Vinny, tell us about your tequila over at La Casa.
Yeah, absolutely. La Casa Cigar and Lounge over at Tivoli Village, a favorite of both of ours.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely Raider friendly, too.
Yes,
with Mike Trenta, being a big Raider fan. Well, what they've done over at La Casa is pair up some specialty tequila with some of their great cigars. So go check it out and
we'll go
enjoy
check it out. Love it. Thanks for coming in, Vinny. Greatly appreciate it. JT, back with you. Thanks again to the GM of the Raiders, Tom Telesco, and Vinny Bonsignore. I've been thrilled to talk to this man when we found out we could have him on again. John Brankus joins us, the six-time Emmy-winning former host of Sports Science on ESPN and one of the biggest TV content providers in the world with Brinks TV now. John, good to talk to you. I greatly appreciate it. How are you?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the introduction. Tons of energy. I love it.
Yes, and we're both friends with Mega Math, the world's smartest math man, Scott Flansburgh. I just got off the phone with him, and he reminded me, he goes, JT, what the amount of shows, John, you did at ESPN, the amount of production you did there, I was reading at Front Office Sports over 1,800 segments. When it comes to TV producing, how many shows did you end up having at ESPN?
God, we did over 1,800 episodes of just Sports Science itself. But what a lot of people don't know is that Sports Science is one of literally 20 different programs that we had. So we had thousands of hours outside of Sports Science. We had Sports Science, Fight Science, Car Science, Stunt Science, Animal Science. Mm-hmm. Any word you could put in front of science, our production company pretty much owned that space. And now we've moved on to creating our own platform and network, Brinks, B-R-I-N-X TV.
And what is going to be the core of the new Brinks TV? What are you looking to do? Because you've taken fans. I got sons who are 22 and 20 and grew up with your programming and loved the science and sports and remember episodes by name. For those who aren't that familiar with that going forward, what are you going to lean on as the key to your production value?
Yeah, we definitely are leaning in on sport. So to date on the Brinks platform, what we are is we are a broadcast reach integration network exchange. That's actually what Brinks stands for. And we are merging content, commerce, and community. So we're the only platform where you can watch and shop without leaving a single screen experience. You can bid, bet, and buy with Brinks Bucks, which is our version of loyalty points. Mm-hmm. Get a Brinks Buck for every minute you watch, dollar you spend, every time that you hit the X that's in the middle of the screen. We have programming like the GOAT Code. It's really sports science taken to the next level. We have an amazing deal with the Pro Football Hall of Fame Media Village, where mm-hmm. every Hall of Famer gets a bronze bust, gold jacket, in a GOAT Code segment. We're cracking the code on the greatest of all time. So we have a football vertical that we started with it. We have a show called The NIL House, so Name, Image, Likeness. It's all the rage, especially in college sports. It actually is the most viewed daily sports program with over 2 million daily viewers. That's on episode like 300 and something. Mm-hmm. So that's going really well. We've got the Marcellus Wiley show. We have fringe sports like slap fighting, mini golf, and carjitsu. In fact, yes, it's jujitsu in a car. This past weekend, we just had an amazing event called Car in a Bar. There was a fight in a car.
I got to hear about this. Hold on, John. How do you have a fight? And I know there was some big names involved in the comedy in the commentary here, including Randy Couture. How do you have a fight in a car in a bar? Explain that to us.
Well, first of all, you got to have a big house. So
you do. I know your house.
I got a big house, and we were all sitting around. So the Brinks HQ, our headquarters, is out of my house. One of our lead investors is Trillis Studios, which is actually the largest television movie studio in the world. Does where all the Marvel movies are shot, you know, Netflix, Warner Brothers, Disney. It's in Georgia. So when you hear about Georgia taking over Hollywood, we are also in Georgia. But my house is Brinks HQ. You know, it's a giant facility that's essentially a production facility disguised as a house. So we have two different virtual reality stages. We have the largest residential bar in the country. It's a 52-foot wraparound bar. We have this huge space where we – I was like, you know what? We're partners with PLN, Pro League Network, and they created a sport called Karjitsu. And the last event that we aired had over 30 million impressions in a week. So it just goes totally – look up Karjitsu, C-A-R-J-I-T-Z-U, yeah. Karjitsu. And I was like, you know what we should do? We should just have a fight in a car, in a bar, in a house. Car in a bar. So I called up Randy Couture, who's one of my best friends, said, dude, you want to come out here and be a part of this? I'm like, sure. Mark Coleman's part of the broadcast team with PLN. So we had Mark Coleman, Randy Couture, and lots of dignitaries that came over. You know, like Champ Bailey was over. Marcus Allen was over. Wow. You know, we had Mojo Rawley come over. It was just unbelievable. So the event was off the hook. Everybody can check it out on Brinks TV, BRINX.TV. Just type in car in a bar, and it was unbelievable.
I'm looking at it now. John Brankus joins us. You know, John, one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on, we have mutual friends, including Jamie Fritz, and I mentioned Scott, and they look at your life and career as someone who's taken television and sports to a much higher level. And I'm fascinated by that topic because I consume a lot of media, and we're seeing regional sports networks, Bally's go under, Amazon's coming in, NBC's fighting to get TNT out and bring the NBA over there. ESPN has been under a lot of criticism since you left in regards to the style of, and the talent of their broadcast going forward. And you've kind of weaved your way through this as an entrepreneur who's always thinking about business and content. Are you excited about the future, or does this look like landmines all over the place, from boxing to UFC to these young people who only have a certain time to consume content, and a lot of them are doing it on their phone?
Yeah, so Brinks TV is built for the ADD generation. If you go to download the Brinks TV app or go to Brinks.tv, BRINX.tv, the app, the experience is amazing. Go to the live channel. I'm going to give you some stats, JT, that you're just going to, like, genuinely, I knew we were on to something. I just didn't realize how much we were on to something. So our live channel, just go to Brinks TV and live, our live channel is the only 24/7 bettable channel. You're betting on the outcome of content. Mm-hmm. You're being paid to watch TV. So our average, to give you an idea, in the month of March alone, we haven't gotten our April numbers back entirely, in March, we issued over 400 quadrillion Brinks bucks, which is a point for every minute watched, dollar spent, every time you hit your X. Because you can bet them, you can bid, buy, or bet with Brinks bucks. Our average watch time is over 20 minutes. That includes everyone who goes in and out for a second. So I say I'm in a ridiculously fortunate position because of a guy named John Skipper who was running ESPN.
Yeah.
He's the one who said short form content's gonna rule the day. Our entire platform is short form content that's bettable.
Brinks.tv. I have it up here in front of me. It looks incredible. The Ray Lewis Show, Marcellus Wiley, The Cult of Eric. I'm seeing everything here. It is slick. It is sharp. You know, John, as we wrap this up, I think the future of sports and entertainment, everybody's trying to figure it out along the way. You've been there. You've been there waiting on talent, trying to get something done on the deadline. Now that you have the house, the studio, you have all these partners here, does it seem easier to you? Or as a entrepreneur businessman, is there always some new levels that you're trying to break through and some things you're working on in the future that you said, wow, thank God I know what I'm doing because everyone else is behind me looking at this?
Yeah, I'm in a very, again, when I say I'm in a ridiculously blessed position, by having a successful production company and knowing how to make really high quality entertainment at an executable price point, meaning we don't have to make a movie for $200 million. I can figure out a way. How do I produce quality that's really high level, do it quickly, and not have to compromise? That background afforded me the opportunity to create a platform that can then allow people to engage with the content in a way that sponsors want to activate. So a sponsor that gets involved, for example, like Omni Coffee that Josh Norman actually owns, is one of our brand new sponsors on Brinks TV. Car in a Bar is getting over 100 million impressions just from that event. Mm-hmm. And it was so insane and crazy. Brands are looking for a way to become involved with media properties, platforms, where they can amplify their brand growth. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to convert a consumer into a customer. And that's what we're really built to do. We believe at Brinks TV, you have to be an idiot to pay a subscription fee to watch TV. We pay you to watch TV. And because of that, there's no friction between the consumer and the actual content.
So is it Brinks TV where we send everyone to? I want all of our listeners, because I'm looking at it, it's incredible. And I'm telling you, I know your backstory because of my friends. Where should we send everyone to get involved with this, and how can they get involved quickly by the end of today?
Absolutely. You can go to any web browser, type in Brinks, BRINX.TV, or just download the app on any Android or iPhone, BRINX TV. Sign up for an account in the upper right hand corner. You automatically get 1,000 Brinks bucks, and those Brinks bucks are used for discounts on sponsor merch and free product. So you automatically get paid just by signing up.
Thank you, John. I look forward to seeing you in Vegas. I know you get out here a lot. Let's make sure we connect together.
Absolutely. I cannot thank you enough for your support, and God bless you.
You got it. John Brinkus, everyone. We had that booked, and then we found out we got Tom Telesco today. Vinny's working in the building. I said, you sit in too. I got Dick Gary Lawless at the top of the hour. I mean, we are flying here. Talk about content providing. Look what we provided in 46 minutes. John Brinkus from Sports Science on ESPN. Let me just tell you this quick before we come back. This guy, television production-wise, guy who puts on television shows, is one of the most successful TV producers of all time in sports. Not at Fox, NFL on Fox. I'm not talking about game day production. What he's done as an entrepreneur, and now he's got this new platform. They had a jiu-jitsu fight in a car, in a bar, which is the largest residence bar in America, in his house. I saw the drone view of his house. It's got to be the biggest house in Atlanta. I don't know. Tyler Perry, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know if a guy owns a bigger piece of real estate than this guy. Maybe other than billionaires who live on the Hamptons. So this guy that we just talked to is special. John Brinkus, go to BRINX.TV and see what this site looks like. He is part of the future of content. We're a content provider. Why do you think we're... I did this yesterday. I did. My son said, Dad, go into the show and do something on Brock Bowers. Why? I'm in mid-late 50s. Why am I going to do something like... Dad, do it. So I end up doing my monologue yesterday on Brock Bowers. I pop a blood vessel in my over my hair. I'm going crazy. And then my son takes it and cuts it up and makes three or four reels on it. He goes, Dad, look at these engagement numbers. I don't care about an engagement number. He goes, yes, you do. These engagement numbers are better than some radio shows in New York and L.A. just on one Brock Bowers rant you did. Everyone's in this business trying to get downloads and impressions. And the king is Shannon Sharpe, Stephen A., and Pat McAfee. Let me say that again. Shannon Sharpe, Stephen A., and Pat McAfee, and some others who are out there. So we'll all get involved in some way. I just want you to listen and enjoy what we've done. I need a break badly. Those are three interviews back, back, back. And Gary Lawless coming up here. I'm nervous as a Golden Knight fan. I'm nervous with Bobby, who runs all the games. Bobby, you might as well just go back to Boston for the summer, man, if we don't win more hockey games. What's going on here? VGK has to win. They were up 2-0 and had home ice advantage and gave it up. You kidding me? Gary Lawless, the best at the top of the hour. This show's ripping today.
Man, I mean, football has always kind of been in the back of my mind. I mean, I remember watching NFL games on like Sunday and Monday and playing catch like in the living room, just watching games and being like, man, I want to be there one day. And I mean, I think all got kind of real like after my freshman year in college, and I was like, man, like I'm gonna have a shot at this, like, and go do it and live out my dream. So, yeah.
All right, this is going to be a real short segment. Gary Lawless coming up. We went late with all three of our guests here. If you want to jump on our YouTube stream, that'll start at 1:15, JT the Brick YT. Do me a favor, jump in on YouTube. See the studio. See what we do. We talk behind the scenes. Only way to get it is to go to YouTube, JT the Brick YT. That is Brock Bowers here. Why do I find myself defending Brock Bowers? What I feel like I cannot believe I am defending Brock Bowers to the haters out there, just a small group in the Raider Nation. Well, you don't have a quarterback. What? Don't have a quarterback. Gardner Minshew's 27. Aiden O'Connell beat the Chiefs on Christmas, put up 63 on the Chargers. 63 on the Chargers last time I looked, and swept Denver. Jimmy Garoppolo got the first game against Denver. What am I missing here? You're going to put the Chargers ahead of the Raiders? It's just because you get paid to have dinner with a guy who tells you that the Chargers are going to be great and you have a comp dinner, you can't do that. And for those who want to crack back at me, well, you do it all the time for the Raiders. Yeah, I've been doing this longer. And again, I take the heat when the Raiders don't do well. And there have been plenty of times I told you through some pretty bad eras of Raider football with some quarterbacks that you don't even want to remember, that the Raiders weren't even a playoff team, 4 or 5 win team. Are the Raiders a playoff team this year? Yeah, they're a playoff team this year if they run the offense aggressively. The defense is going to play well. They've got to get this offense up and running, and it's got to be clicking week one. I'll be preaching that the entire offseason.